Enemies of the People, December 2022, Chapter 4, Grabbing the Infrastructure. Over the last 200 years, the Rothschilds have systematically gained control of much of the infrastructure of the modern industrial world. Their first big step in this direction was with the railways, which changed European life and ushered in the 19th century new normal. As early as 1836, Salomon Rothschild was writing that the railways were going to create, quote, completely new possibilities, industrial, commercial, political, and military, end quote. Indeed, as Professor Carol Quigley observes, much of the impetus to industrial advance came from the railways, since these became, quote, by far the chief purchasers of ferrous metals, coals, and petroleum products, end quote. Railways amounted to the tentacles of a central state commercial system reaching everywhere, extracting resources from the countryside, moving around raw materials and manufactured goods, providing rapid communication and personal mobility, and in the case of war, transporting thousands of troops to the borders. Right from the outset, the railway companies tended to link up various aspects of this process, becoming giant, multifaceted industrial groups of the kind with which we are so familiar today. One of the biggest Rothschild rail projects was in the north of France, where the Compagnie du Chemin de Fer du Nord was at the centre of an immense industrial web, also including waterway navigation, steel and coal, and whose capital reached 1.3 billion francs by 1895. Importantly for the Rothschilds and their like, these vast continental-scale construction projects created the need to spend vast amounts of public money. Says Quigley, quote, the rise of financial capitalism in France, as elsewhere, was made possible by the demand for capital for railroad building. End quote. Ferguson confirms that the Rothschilds played leading roles in railway finance in Austria, France and Germany. Quote, by the middle of the century, the Rothschilds were already well on the way to building a highly profitable pan-European railway network. End quote. They're also heavily involved in a series of loans for railway building in Russia, particularly in the 1870s and 1890s. A 400 million franc loan to the Russian government in 1896 even led to Alphonse de Rothschild being decorated with the Grand Cross by the Tsar. The adverse effect of this industrialisation on all aspects of the traditional cohesive life of the country was immense, as Quigley explains. Quote, the railroads had a most profound effect on Russia from every point of view, binding one-sixth of the earth's surface into a single political unit and transforming that country's economic, political and social life. The drain of wealth from the peasants to the urban and export markets was increased, especially in the period before 1890. This process was assisted by the advent of a money economy to those rural areas which had previously been closer to a self-sufficient or a barter basis. This increased agricultural specialisation and weakened handicraft activities. End quote. The family was also involved with the Imperial Lombardo Venetian and Central Italian Railway Company, which gave the Rothschilds and their associates control of more than 600 miles of Italian railways. There were further railway acquisitions in Italy, Spain and Austria, as well as in present-day Slovenia and Croatia. It's hardly surprising to learn that following their involvement in the initial 1960s study group, Rothschild acted as advisors to the European Channel Tunnel Group, which initiated the present railway link between London and Paris, their two main historical centres of activity. Having surfed the wave of railway profits, the Rothschilds turned their attention to the physical infrastructure of the money system itself, gold. Their interest in gold mining grew rapidly at the end of the 19th century, notably in South Africa, and fitted in nicely with their gold refining and broking business. Through their vehicles such as Rio Tinto and the Exploration Company, the Rothschilds built up a vast empire of gold mines which spread to West Australia, New Zealand, California, Mexico and Venezuela. They reaped, says Ferguson, quote, substantial returns from the various mining companies. The profits to be made from such investments were huge, end quote. The Rothschilds thus had an obvious vested interest in promoting the gold standard, which became, in effect, as Ferguson explains, the global monetary system. quote, "The London and Paris houses acted as vital auxiliaries to their respective central banks, spending specie across the Channel in large quantities at times of crisis in one or another market. This in itself was a profitable business." End quote. The demand for gold seemed likely to remain buoyant as more and more countries adopted it as a basis for their monetary systems. He adds, quote, "Small wonder the English Rothschilds encouraged the spread of the gold standard." End quote. The Rothschilds' central role in this system was not concealed. After the First World War, the world market price for gold was set every morning at 11 a.m. following an auction conducted at their head office in New Court, London. One great leap forward for the modern world was the electrification of our lives. Funnily enough, the Rothschilds were on hand to profit from this development by gaining, quote, "a position of real power on the world copper market," end quote, copper being the principal metal required for the new electric infrastructure. Having gained a controlling interest in the Rio Tinto copper mines in Spain in the late 1880s, described by Ferguson as, quote, "an involvement which proved exceedingly profitable as world demand for copper soared," end quote, they went on to expand their copper investments elsewhere, such as in German Southwest Africa. Another great advance on the glorious path of industrial progress was, of course, the growing dependence on oil, and thus on plastics, pharmaceutics, chemical fertilizers, and so on. The claim was already being made in 1890 by Hessian Reichstag deputy Otto Birkel that the Rothschilds had cornered the world market in oil. This tied in nicely with their control of the railway infrastructure. Doherty McGregor write, quote, "The Rothschilds, behind a myriad of different company titles, constructed oil tank wagons for the railways, storage depots and refineries for the production of petrol and kerosene, and bartered with government departments over concessions and favourable rail cargo fares," end quote. They were notably involved in the Russian oil fields around Baku, now in Azerbaijan, where, explained Doherty and McGregor, they, quote, "amassed vast and highly profitable investments," end quote. I've already described in the piece on the Great War how the Rothschilds controlled Germany's oil supply at the time, notably via Romania. They've also long been close to the multinational oil entity, which became known as Royal Dutch Shell. Writes Ferguson, quote, "The tendency was for the Rothschilds to participate in the gradual merger between Shell and Royal Dutch. The Rothschilds took a third share of the Asiatic Petroleum Company created by the two oil firms in 1902, and in 1911 exchanged their entire Russian operation for shares in Royal Dutch and Shell, making them the largest shareholders in each," end quote. The Shell connection is very apparent in the Rothschilds' story, whether in the way that Anthony de Rothschild, Third Lord Rothschild, directed scientific research at Royal Dutch Shell, or in the fact that when Edouard de Rothschild died in 1949, his estate included 720 million francs worth of shares in the same oil giant. The last piece of infrastructure I want to mention was in truth the first in the Rothschilds' journey to power, communications. Because the five houses founded by Meyer Emscholz, Rothschild's five sons, excuse me, represented by the five arrows in the family logo, were scattered all over Europe, a fast, secure and effective internal communications system was essential. Before the age of telegraphs, let alone telephones, they developed a network of couriers and private ships that accepted no external passengers. This enabled them to gain news of events elsewhere on the continent, ahead of competitors and even governments. It also brought them closer to diplomats and other government officials who came to rely on Rothschild communications to keep ahead of the game, thereby also allowing the Rothschilds to keep abreast of what was being communicated. They adapted, of course, to changing times, even before the Dover-Calais submarine telegraph table had been laid in 1851, Julius Reuter wrote to the Rothschilds offering them the monopoly of its banking-related use. Reuters remains part of what we now call the media, and the Rothschilds are certainly very present in that domain, even if the details of their involvement are only rarely made clear. Evelyn de Rothschild, who died in November 2022, was proud of the fact that from 1972 to 1989 he was chairman of The Economist magazine, which he once called, quote, "probably the most independent publication in the world," end quote. Independent of what? Ferguson records that Rothschild also sat on the boards of Beaverbrook Newspapers and the Telegraph PLC, and that the Rothschilds invested in ATV, one of the first independent television companies in the UK. Quigley records that the Rothschilds' Paribas block of businesses in France included both Havas and Hachette. Quote, Havas was a great monopolistic news agency, as well as the most important advertising agency in France. It could and did suppress or spread both news and advertising. It usually supplied news reports gratis to those newspapers which would print the advertising copy it also provided. It received secret subsidies from the government for almost a century, a fact first revealed by Balzac. Hachette had a monopoly on the distribution of periodicals and a sizeable portion of the distribution of books. This monopoly could be used to kill papers which were regarded as objectionable. End quote. The biggest and most controversial name in French media today is billionaire industrialist Vincent Bolloré, a fervent Catholic, currently facing serious charges of corrupting government officials in Togo, Africa. Through his firm Vivendi, he gained control of the aforementioned Havas in 2017 and controls several TV and radio channels, as well as publications such as Paris Match and the Journal du Dimanche. Intriguingly, as a young man, Bolloré worked for the Rothschilds, becoming assistant director to Edmond de Rothschild. In 2003, it emerged that he owned 300 million euros of shares in Paris Orléans, a giant holding company, which in 2015 was renamed Rothschild & Co.